Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 170th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined one more time by my longtime partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
This is indeed my final broadcast with Laura on Capital Week, but never fear, she's going to be here next week on this broadcast and for many weeks and years to come. And I'll have more to say later in this broadcast about why I am stepping away. But first, let's get down to business, legislative business. The legislature wrapped up this year's session at 4:23 a.m. on Saturday morning. And yes, Laura was there. She saw it all. You never get any sleep, Laura. And we're going to talk about the major bills that were passed last week. Let's start with the bill that affects everybody in Iowa, a bill on a flat 3.8% income tax.
Yes, they accelerated. They finally came to an agreement on what to do about the tax cuts. They didn't go as far as Governor Reynolds wanted, but they did agree to speed up the move, the transition to a flat tax. There were some other changes in the tax bill that affected some fixes to the property tax reform that passed last year, but this was the major tax thing to happen. And I do want to say that the Democrats objected to the idea that this is a tax cut for everybody in Iowa because they pointed out that approximately 500,000 Iowans don't earn enough to pay income taxes, but they do pay other taxes, sales taxes, property taxes in many cases, and so on. But they aren't going to see any benefit from this income tax cut.
So the bill is expected to reduce state revenue by $328 million in the next fiscal year, $605 million in the fiscal year that follows. So reduced revenue, how's Iowa going to make it up?
Well, the projections from the revenue estimating conference that met in March seem to suggest that Iowa can still get through. Remember, there's a very large ending balance because for the last several years, the Republican majority has been budgeting far less. They've been spending far less than they're allowed to under state law. The state law allows the legislature to spend up to 99% of projected revenues, and they've been spending below 90%. Last year, I think it was 82 or 83% of projected revenues. So there are some pretty large surpluses and ending balances built into the budget. So for a while, they will be able to sustain these tax cuts. But what the Democrats who vote large, most of the Democrats voted against this package, and what several of them said during the debate is that this is going to cause a problem in the long term, particularly if and when there's a downturn in the economy, which does tend to happen eventually.
If it seems as if the Republicans have been focused on tax cuts in the last couple of sessions, well, they have. Remember that just this session, they have approved a pair of proposed constitutional amendments, to make it harder for Democrats to raise taxes in the future.
That's right. And these would still have to go through another legislature before they would go on the ballot. But the idea is one of them requires Iowa to have a flat individual income tax rate. That is, if the state levies an individual income tax at all, it has to be the same for everybody, no matter how much you're earning. The other one would say that any bill raising either the income tax for individuals or the corporate income tax, that would require a two-thirds vote in each chamber of the legislature. That is highly unusual. The Constitution says that all bills just require a simple majority vote. So again, this would only apply to individual income taxes and corporate taxes. It notably would not apply to sales taxes. So if the legislature after this year's elections, if the legislature passes those constitutional amendments again, then they would go on a statewide ballot and then Iowans would decide whether they want to make those changes. And those were party line votes against for Republicans, for Democrats against both of those constitutional amendments. As for the income tax cut bill, there were 7 Democrats in the Senate and 10 in the House who did vote for that.
Before the legislature could wrap it up on Saturday morning, they had to pass some budget bills. Well, they did, setting the state's budget at $8.9 billion.
Yes. And again, that was considerably less than what the projected revenues are. And remember, Iowa is still receiving some money from the federal government through the American Rescue Plan that will continue for about another year or two, but that's not going to continue indefinitely. And that is part of the concern. And when you say they passed a series of bills on Saturday morning, the final budget bill did not even appear on the website until after midnight. They were running it through committee after 2 a.m. in the Senate, and I think around that time in the House, or it certainly it was well after midnight in the House. So that's usually that final standings appropriations bill is usually one of the last bills to get approved. But this was unusual in that we weren't even able to see the text until after midnight on the last day.
It was a frenetic last few days. In those last few days, among the things the legislature passed, the Senate voted 32 to 14 on Friday and sent to Governor Reynolds a bill eliminating dozens of state boards and commissions.
Yes, yeah, so this was something that both it was in a holding pattern for really a couple of months because there were two different bills. The Senate bill on eliminating state boards and commissions was very much like the governor's proposal that would eliminate more than 100. The House had a completely different bill that would have spared dozens of commissions, and both chambers were hanging on to that until the last minute. So I think that what happened with the state boards and commissions bill is that it got drawn into a grand bargain with everything else, and the final result was much closer to what the Senate and the governor wanted than what the House wanted. And House Democrats, it was a very emotionally charged debate in the House, where Democrats who had supported the House version of that legislation in committee were very upset at what was being passed. And the two things that they were most upset about were changing the powers and duties of the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, really giving the commissioners almost no power and turning it into an advisory body where the executive director, who is appointed by the governor, would have all the authority to resolve cases in most cases. The other part of it that the House Democrats were really unhappy about was eliminating the community-specific commissions. Those are, for instance, the Commission on the Status of African Americans, the Commission for Latino Affairs, the Commission on the Status of Women. There is one for Native Americans. There's one for deaf people with disabilities. There's a separate commission for deaf people. And so all of these are going to be merged into one Human Rights Council. And the people are saying that this is not going to be the same level of representation for these groups. There was also a commission on Asian and Pacific Islanders that's also being eliminated as part of that. So that was what a lot of the debate centered on in both the House and the Senate.
Yeah, the bill eliminates 67 boards and commissions, merges some others, reduces the membership on some boards. Now, remember, that's what happened this year. One year ago, there was a massive government reorganization plan that the governor had proposed and she signed into law that reduced cabinet-level state agencies from 37 to 16. She has been bent on reducing government.
Yeah, and well, it's questionable how much government has been reduced because a lot of it has just been merging one agency into another agency. So, for instance, the Department of Health and Human Services has gotten much larger. The Department of Administrative Services has gotten much larger because those have absorbed some of other things that used to be independent agencies under state government. But what's the Iowa Civil Rights Commission? I mean, that it has been independent since its creation, and the NAACP and some other groups, and for instance, LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens, they're very concerned about what's going to happen when that commission is not only not as independent as it once was, but is managed by the governor's appointee.
And let's talk quickly about some other bills that passed last week. One of them, on a mostly party line vote, the Senate passed the House bill that bans guaranteed income programs at the local level.
This was the latest example of the legislature taking powers away from local government. So I think we talked about the traffic camera issue, and this is another example of that. So there is a pilot project in Polk County and neighboring counties that involves private companies as well as government, some federal government funds and local funds. It doesn't actually involve any state funds, but this pilot project will be allowed to continue. They're studying what happens when a certain group of people, low-income people, are receiving $500 a month, no strings attached. But after this pilot project ends, local governments will not be able to study or to implement anything like that, regardless of what this study shows, even if the study ends up showing that it's very effective.
Another bill that passed this time in the House and was sent to the governor, a plan to change the structure of the state's mental health and substance abuse services.
And this was one of the governor's proposals that she wanted. And most of the Democrats did end up voting for this, although there are a lot of misgivings about how it's going to work because there are a lot of moving pieces. And I heard particularly from people who represent Linn County and Johnson County that there are some concerns about what's going to happen when these substance abuse and mental health regions are reshuffled. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the legislature come back next year and maybe tweak some aspects of that bill.
The House also voted along party lines and sent to the governor a bill allowing schools to use professional development money to pay for training for armed staff members.
Yeah, so this is a kind of adding insult to injury to the people involved with the area education agencies, which used to exclusively handle professional development. So not only are the area education agencies not guaranteed to get that funding, but now some school districts will be able to divert some of that money to use for training for armed staff members. It's not clear how many school districts. It seems like at least 10 or 20 probably around the state are going to try to implement some kind of program to allow staff to carry firearms.
And another bill that was sent to Governor Reynolds late last week, and this was on a unanimous House vote, a bill changing the formula for distributing state money to community colleges.
Yes, and this one, there was only one senator who voted against this, Senator Claire Selcy, who was concerned that community college presidents and CEOs would have too much control over the funding formula. But in any case, there are a lot of changes to the education system in Iowa, some of them through last year's state government reorganization, some through what happened with the area education agencies this year. And now this is another example. So again, the legislature may come back and tweak some of these changes next year.
It is 11 and a half minutes after the hour on this Monday night. If you're listening to us live and you're in tune with KQI Radio's Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. This is our fourth year of being here in this time slot to talk about politics with an Iowa flavor. It's also my final Capital Week broadcast. More on that in a few minutes. And a reminder, this program is available as a podcast. Just search for KQI's Capital Week on whatever your favorite platform is, Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Spotify, and there we are. Again, it's KHY's Capital Week. All right, the governor signed many, many bills into law last week. We can't possibly go over all of them. She signed more than 40. Let's talk about some of the major ones, including that bill on Boy Scout sex abuse survivors.
So this was some high drama on Thursday and Friday, and this bill is a good example of how just because something ends up passing unanimously doesn't mean that it was uncontroversial. So this was a bill, remember, that this grew out of a settlement, a national settlement that's happened related to sexual abuse, the Boy Scouts. It's a $2.5 billion fund, I believe, settlement fund. And states, there was an April 19th deadline for people to be able to participate. And one of the issues was the statute of limitations. So Iowa has an estimated at least 300, perhaps 350 or 400 survivors who could possibly collect some of the funds from this lawsuit. However, Iowa statute of limitations would not have allowed them to fully participate. So this bill was very narrowly crafted just to allow people to collect on some of these claims. And it passed the Senate unanimously. But in the House, there were members of the majority party who felt very strongly that it's wrong to be opening up the statute of limitations. They were worried about what happens when the next group of people wants to come and make an exception to the statute of limitations. So as of Thursday, the House Republican leadership was not planning to bring this bill to the floor at all. And then the Democrats said, we're going to run an amendment and we're going to force a vote on this. We're going to run this as an amendment to some other bill. And all of a sudden, very quickly, it was assigned to a committee. It was moved through committee and it was brought to the House floor on Friday, just in time for the House to pass it. They actually had a small amendment to it, but then it had to go back to the Senate. But just in time for the governor to sign it on the very last day that it could be signed to allow those survivors of sexual abuse to collect from the fund.
Just in the nick of time. All right. And the governor also signed a bill, and this one was controversial, allowing teachers and other school employees to get a permit to carry guns on school grounds. She signed it.
Yes, this one was the most controversial part of this bill is the qualified immunity section. So it says that employees who are authorized to be armed and on school grounds would have immunity from criminal prosecution, but also from civil liability if the reasonable use of force at school causes some mishap, somebody to be severely injured and killed. And one question that I haven't heard an answer to is, what happens if somebody is injured or killed at school, not through the reasonable use of a firearm, for instance, trying to defend against an intruder, but what if there's a careless use of a firearm? So something accidentally goes off, a teacher leaves a loaded weapon in the bathroom and some student picks it up. And so it's not clear to me whether the qualified immunity really applies to that. And I'm going to be curious to see whether these insurance carriers for some of the school districts increase the rates because they're concerned about accidents like that happening.
And the governor also signed into law a bill on military veterans benefits.
Yes, this was not controversial. There were a couple of veterans bills that came in late in the session. I don't know why they waited until the very end to pass that, but in any case, that was something that the governor signed.
All right, we're going to have a brief summary now of what passed in this legislative session. Again, just a few of the things that passed. Many things passed. Maybe the most controversial, the longest conversation we had in the legislature this year, the overhaul of Iowa's area education agencies.
This one just sucked all the oxygen out of the room for the better part of 3 months in the legislature, and it was something that wasn't even on anybody's radar last year. So the governor, the bill that finally passed was substantially different from what Governor Reynolds wanted, but it still was the biggest change to Iowa's AEAs since the system was created 50 years ago. So the AEAs will still be handling most special education services. However, the AEAs will no longer be the sole provider of many different types of media and education services, and school districts are going to have more freedom to decide how they want to spend those funds, and they may divert them for other uses, not with the AEA. So there's a lot of instability in that system.
We talked about that for many weeks on this broadcast. Also, the legislature created a new crime of illegal re-entry into the state by undocumented immigrants.
This was the main immigration-related bill. There were a couple of other bills that the Senate and House proposed that didn't get through the other chamber, but this was the one that everybody could agree with. It's modeled on a Texas law. That Texas law is right now being challenged in the federal courts, and so we'll see if it's found to be constitutional. But the idea is that it makes it a state-level crime to re-enter the state of Iowa for somebody who has previously been deported.
Legislature also
By the
passed.
way, I expect a lawsuit over that very soon by advocacy groups representing immigrants in Iowa.
Very important addition there. Thank you for doing that. The legislature also enacted language intended to protect religious freedom, and it was controversial.
Yes, this one is a bill that's modeled on what a couple of dozen other states have done, but this was a party line vote in both chambers of the legislature, and the supporters say that this is just going to enhance people's ability to defend themselves in court, and the detractors say that this is going to make it easier for people to discriminate against others just under the guise of religious belief.
Legislature not only passed that bill we just talked about, reducing the number of boards and commissions, it passed a bill getting rid of gender balance on boards and commissions.
Yes, this was another one. This was something that had been in the Iowa code for more than 35 years. Iowa was the first state to require a gender balance on state boards and commissions, and the governor had originally proposed ending that requirement as part of her state boards and commissions bill. But because there were so many differences between the House and the Senate versions of that bill, they ended up pulling this provision out that all of the Republicans in both chambers could agree on, and they went ahead and passed that as a standalone bill. So yes, so that's no longer required, and it's going to be very interesting to watch in the coming years to see how many Iowa boards remain gender balanced.
And there were many others, but let's just focus on one or two more. The Foreign Ag Land Ownership Bill passed the legislature.
Yes, so there were several of the governor's bills that she requested that passed. That was one of them. It's not a ban on foreign ownership of farmland, but more regulations, stiffer penalties for violating those regulations. Also, she had some bills that she asked for that were related to reading instruction. That passed with very few changes, so that'll change the way. The bill will say that teachers, and when they're going through and getting their teacher certification in Iowa, they have to learn certain methods of teaching literacy. Also, this was something that the governor wanted very much, and she mentioned in her condition of the state speech, the more options for maternal support program. That is the program that will divert state funds to crisis pregnancy centers that discourage people from having an abortion. And that was something that had been approved previously, but they weren't able to find a vendor to do it. So this new bill says that the State Department of Health and Human Services can administer that program themselves.
Okay, there were obviously many bills that failed in this legislative session. Let's just talk about a few of those, starting with immunity for pesticide makers. That failed.
Yeah, that was one that the Senate approved, a party line vote. This was something that Bayer is the company that now owns Monsanto, which was the producer of Roundup. So this was something that Bayer's lobbyists advocated for. And this was touch and go. I think there was a lot of support for it in the House, but just not enough to get it over the finish line. But this would have made it basically impossible for Iowans to join these lawsuits claiming that the company failed to warn them that Roundup could cause certain kinds of cancers or perhaps Parkinson's.
Also, a very well-publicized bill failed on, it was called Baby Olivia. It involved an anti-abortion video that some people wanted played in schools.
I really was surprised that this one didn't get through the Senate. This was a House bill that was approved on party lines. This was an anti-abortion group, Live Action, has produced this video, and they're trying to pass this kind of legislation in a number of states that would require the original bill would have required from first through 12th grade this video. Then it was revised to be 7th through 12th grade. And then did go through a Senate committee, and they said maybe they would amend some of the language, but it never did come to the Senate floor.
And legislation that would have defined sex failed.
This was one of the governor's proposals that she wanted to get there. There would have been a number of provisions that the LGBTQ community was very opposed to, but one of the general thrust of the bill would have said that sex would be narrowly defined in terms of your sex assigned at birth. And that would be true for birth certificates as well. And the original idea was even to include driver's license. There was a very late effort to amend an unrelated bill with something related to defining sex on birth certificates, but the House Republican who introduced that amendment ended up withdrawing it without calling a vote on it. Actually, this year, none of the anti-LGBTQ bills reached the governor's desk, which was a big change from last year when there were four or five bills that the LGBTQ community strongly opposed that were enacted into law.
Couple of others that did not make it. One would have made it easier for landowners to challenge eminent domain decisions. Another one would have increased the salary for state lawmakers and elected officials.
Those were both House bills. The eminent domain was one that was passed weeks ago. The salary bill they introduced just about on the very last day almost to were running that and sending it over to the Senate. So not surprising the Senate didn't take that up. And of course, all of the efforts to deal with eminent domain have gone nowhere in the Senate.
And another bill failed involving opioid settlement money.
Yes, this is one that I'm going to be writing about in more detail because Iowa has about $44 million sitting in an account right now that's the proceeds from a multi-state lawsuit against the opioid manufacturers. And the legislature a couple of years ago passed a bill that said the attorney general's office can't allocate that money. The legislature has to decide how to allocate it. And now we have the second legislative session in a row that has come and gone with no bill approved that says how that money is going to be spent.
And something that rarely happens in the legislature happened. And this is a conference committee over a bill on driving privileges, of all things, for 14 and 15-year-olds.
Now, this was the first conference committee under the Republican trifecta. So the Republicans have controlled both chambers of the legislature since 2017, and they've always been able to work out their differences behind closed doors or not work out their differences, and then one chamber just doesn't bring the bill to the floor. But this was kind of odd. It was a bill that would change the number of miles that 14 and 15-year-olds can drive to get to and from school activities and work, reduce that from 50 to 25 miles. And there were some other aspects of the bill. But it was an interesting experience for me. It was the first conference committee I ever attended. Those are open to the public. But in any case, both sides claimed afterwards that they got most of what they wanted. So the House Republicans said it was a great deal for them, and the Senate said it was a great deal for them.
And let's spend a minute talking about the fact that some major publishers, in fact, five of the biggest book publishers in the U.S., joined a lawsuit challenging that Iowa law that bans books depicting sex acts from school libraries.
And we talked about this a lot in December because this is the lawsuit that originally Penguin Random House, along with the Iowa State Education Association and a group of educators, some authors of popular books, and one student from the Urbandale School District. So they were the ones who originally filed this lawsuit in November. This led to the federal injunction. So the book ban cannot be enforced. Also, the ban on instruction related to gender identity and sexual orientation as well is part of this. So it's this. State has appealed that district court ruling. It's pending with the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and now five more publishers have joined this lawsuit. But for now, the state cannot enforce that book ban.
All right, we need to spend the last few minutes of this broadcast so that I can say goodbye. As I said earlier, this is my final broadcast on KHY's Capital Week after 170 episodes over 39 months. Yes, the time has come for me to pull back just a bit from KHY. After all, I am getting older and I cannot deny that. And this seems really like a good time to leave. It was exactly 50 years ago this year, 50 years, I can hardly believe it, when I somehow became the youngest TV reporter in Fresno, California history. That led to other jobs across the nation as a news reporter and anchor and producer. I've really had a wonderful life and had the chance to work in such places as Los Angeles and San Francisco and Phoenix and Atlanta and Detroit, even Buffalo. I have been so fortunate. I've covered so many major stories, earthquakes, fires, floods, presidential elections, local elections, all of it. In these past few years, after I retired from commercial broadcasting, I volunteered here on KHOI, and this has been an absolute joy. Now, working on this program with Laura has been absolutely wonderful. When we started out on that Monday night, February 1st, 2021, at 7 o'clock, we had no idea how Capital Week would work or how long it would last. Well, it's worked all right, and it has lasted. And it is now, I truly believe, the best political broadcast on radio in Iowa, bar none. And you, Laura Bellin, make it that way. I have truly loved working with you.
And Dennis, I have learned so much about broadcasting from you. I don't know if the listeners are aware that I never had a background in broadcasting at all. I even though I worked for Radio Free Europe in what I call my past life covering Russian politics, it wasn't on the radio broadcasting side. So I've been covering Iowa politics for more than 15 years, but other than doing occasional interviews for a segment on the radio or for a podcast, I had never had the experience of a regular broadcast. And so Dennis, being, as we call him, the true broadcast professional, it really showed me the way, how to put a program together, how to plan for the program. We had to make very many last minute changes to accommodate breaking news on Monday. And I just can't thank Dennis enough for how much I've learned through this process.
Now, one of the things listeners have no idea about is some of the places where we've done this broadcast over the years. Remember, we had to be here at 7 o'clock on Monday nights, no matter where we were in the United States. Your home is in Windsor Heights. Mine was in Ames, and it's now in Madera, California. But we've often been away from home, and you've done it a few times from your car. But perhaps the most memorable spot you ever did the show from was from your hospital room.
Yes. I sadly, in January of 2022, destroyed my ankle on a Saturday and spent 5 days in the hospital. And so on that Monday, I was able, fortunately, there was a good Wi-Fi connection in the hospital. So from my hospital bed, I was able to do the show. And then actually back at home, I was still, we had to have a hospital bed set up at the house. So it was a few months before I could do the show at my desk like I normally do.
And over these years, my wife and I were often traveling when Monday nights rolled around. And that's given me the challenge of originating this program from, among other places, Disney World in Orlando, many times, hotel rooms in Texas and Oklahoma and Wyoming and South Dakota, Airbnbs in Oregon and California, even from a two-car garage at a friend's home in Three Forks, Montana. We did the show one night. Wherever we were, Laura, the imperative was to get on the air live at 7 o'clock. And you know what? We never missed a show.
No, we didn't. I had to do a couple of shows from Okoboji from my car and one from Des Moines in my car, actually covering that lawsuit. The hearing, we were pre-recording the show before Christmas. And I remember being having to leave the federal courthouse to get out to my car so we could tape the show. And then I went back in to catch the rest of the hearing.
Well, you know, I have never forgotten what Steve Carlin, the great Des Moines news anchor on KCCI-TV, said when he retired last year, because it's so true. He said, no matter how much you love doing something, you cannot keep doing it forever. And so here I am, ready to slow down a bit. Now, I'm still going to be here on KHOI's Local Talk on Monday mornings, giving the statewide news. And I'll continue to host Local Talk once a month with Ames Mayor John Hale, Paul Wearson, and Maggie Westphal. But while I'm leaving this broadcast, Laura, I assure you, is not. She will continue taking this program to new heights, making it even more than the must-listen-to that it's been. And I know you'll continue tuning in, as I will. Laura, the very, very best of luck to you.
Oh, best wishes. And Dennis, we may yet recruit you back for some kind of special politics broadcast at some point.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is, I'll do it. You recruit me and we'll see what happens. How's that? And now, one more time. Oh boy, I get to say that you have been listening to Capital Week on KHY Community Radio. Reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura will be back here next week at the same time, and she'll be talking about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We have always appreciated, we have always valued it. And now, one last time from me, Dennis Hart. Good night, Godspeed, and may the wind be always at your back.